Now on to phase two of our story.
Phase two? Oh, you mean because Burgoyne is no longer on the lake supported by his armada and the troops are going by land?
Exactly, and the artillery is going by water.
That seems problematic. It is one thing to haul cargo on a big boat, but now they are going to have to carry everything. Where are they going?
South to Fort Edward, where they pick up the Hudson River.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to get there, but then you need to bring all these supplies.
Good point. There are three segments of land carries needed to reach the Hudson River. There was Fort Ticonderoga to Lake George, Lake George to Fort Edward, and then Whitehall to Fort Edward. They needed horses and carts to haul materials from Canada to their location.
We were obliged to remain a long time at Skeensboro on account of getting horses and wagons from Canada. Our heavy baggage, etc., was mostly then sent to stores appointed at Ticonderoga, as there was no longer any water carriage.
Imagine trekking, though, through this wilderness lowland in the humidity, heat, and frequent storms of July. There are dense woods, dozens of meandering creeks, and deep morasses. The road was little more than a wide trail. Some men were just marching, but others were hauling artillery, munitions, and supplies on carts that had no metal rims on the wheels, made of raw green wood. The stops were constant as the carts would break down or get stuck at every pitfall.
That sounds absolutely miserable.
One British officer noted that the watery grounds and marshes were so numerous that they had constructed no less than 40 bridges, one of which was over 2 miles long.
Bridges. Now I can see how bringing an engineer with you could be helpful.
Wasmas was also along for the journey and a keen observer. Listen.
The first rattlesnake was killed in front of our line today. It was almost 4 feet long and had 7 bells at its tail. Before biting, it first makes a noise with the bells so that everyone coming too close can take heed. It was brownish black on the back, beautifully covered, decorated in various colors, and with an unusual pattern of scales. It was yellowish white under the belly, and shone as if a ring had grown here against the top of it. As beautiful as its body was, its head and eyes were terrible. The head was broad and similar to that of a large toad. The teeth, very sharp, crooked, and pointed like fish hooks, with which it can do harm when it jumps on its victims.
Plus, you have the mosquitoes, the black flies, and gnats.
Oh yes, I remember. You can conquer the people of America, but you can't conquer the landscape.
Right, Marshal. And in this instance, the rebels were making life difficult as well.
We marched from Skeensboro, and though but 15 miles to Fort Anne, were 2 days going it, as the enemy had felled large trees over the river, which there turned so narrow as not to allow more than one bateau abreast, from whence we were obliged to cut a road through the wood, which was attended with great fatigue and labor for our wagons and artillery.
The rebel General Schuyler had cleverly ordered the narrow route through the wilderness to be sabotaged. They knocked over trees with the branches intertwined to block roadways.
And I would bet while the British were clearing the route, they were sitting ducks for enemy fire from the woods.
That's my boy. Good tactical thinking. Just imagine, as the British troops were spread out along this narrow path, there was no way for them to come at the rebels with force. Digby noted that not all of Burgoyne's men believed that they should have taken this route.
Many here were of opinion. The general had not the least business in bringing the army to Skeensboro after the precipitate flight of the enemy from Ticonderoga. And though we had gained a complete victory over them both at Fort Anne and Hubbardton, yet no visible advantage was likely to flow from either, except proving the goodness of our troops at the expense of some brave men.
I would feel anxious walking through the hot, muggy forest having to clear the road of heavy old trees while being shot at by my enemy.
There was also the psychological impact of stumbling through a forest that the enemy had just abandoned.
We halted at night on an eminence and were greatly distressed for water, no river being near, and a report that the enemy had poisoned a spring at a small distance. But it was false, as our surgeon tried an experiment on the water and found it good.
I would never have thought of that. Isn't there any way Burgoyne could have gone back up to Ticonderoga to take the Lake George route?
Here's what Burgoyne later wrote to Lord George Germain.
I was not surprised that a great part of these difficulties might have been avoided by falling back from Skeensborough to Ticonderoga by water in order to take a more commodious route by Lake George. But besides wishing to prevent the effect which a retrograde motion often has...
Retrograde?
Backwards.
...to abate the panic of the enemy, I considered that the natural consequence would be a resistance of delay at least.
So that is his reason? That he didn't want to give the perception of retreat to both the enemy and his troops? No wonder Digby is upset.
It was a slow and arduous task. He was only moving at a mile a day.